We're less than a year from another halving, awaiting systemic implications from federal regulation and institutional adoption, standing at the precipice of an American primary election into which Bitcoin has irrevocably inserted itself. Welcome to the big leagues. Bitcoin is being recognized as the most powerful brand in the world, and everyone wants a piece of that sweet orange action. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we have got a really good read today. This one we are diving into from Bitcoin Magazine, and this one is titled The Difficult Adjustment, and it does not have anything to do with the difficulty adjustment, the element of the protocol that regulates the time it takes to create a block. We are talking about we're moving into a new era of Bitcoin. And as someone who has been in this space for 12 years and some change, I think in particular, like I still remember the at least two major shifts in thinking that we've already had to go through. And there's a lot of people that have entered in the 2019, 2020, 2021 era who have yet to make that adjustment. And it's not an easy adjustment to make, to kind of shift how you think and how you interact with Bitcoin. And I've been loosely trying to prepare it a little bit on this show. I've been trying to stay ahead of it because I've been seeing where I suspected those shifts were going to take place. And that's really what this show is about, is to think about, as we move into the new year, where is Bitcoin going to have to change? Where is our relationship to it and our mental frame of it going to have to shift? And what does it mean? So we're going to jump right into this one, and then I'll do a guy's take afterward. But I also want to remind everyone that I am posting a lot of this stuff now on YouTube. I have a YouTube and Rumble channel. And of course, I both have Bitcoin Audible as well as AI Unchained. So if anybody's interested in going down the AI rabbit hole and how I think it applies and my exploration of that technology, please check out AI Unchained. My brother mentioned to me just yesterday, he was like, you realize like probably people just don't even know that you have these other networks, because even he forgot about them. He's like, you should really mention these more often. So I will have the link to those in the show notes. And also, I want to give a shout out to Fountain. So I have been really impressed with the Fountain app for a long time. My one drawback has always been the user interface. But the streaming sats, the value for value, the boost, it's been really, really amazing. I've loved what they are building over there. But they just dropped a new UX for their app, and it is amazing. I am officially dropping Spotify. Finally, I am going to send nothing but Fountain apps. It's clean. I think it was two clicks. I go through one of my metrics for whether or not the app is going to be something I use regularly is, okay, the top five things that I do with this, how many clicks does it take to get to those items? Everything was two or three tops. And it was super intuitive. I never went looking. It was just one of those things that it was just obvious where it was going to be. I don't know. They clearly have been working on it for a long time, but I just want to give another shout out. I tweeted it out and sent it out on Nostr as well. But man, just amazing job. Fountain.fm or Fountain app, if you want to look for it in iOS or Google Play or whatever. It is now my predominant podcasting app. You should definitely check it out. There's Lightning and Bitcoin directly integrated. I mean, you don't have to use it if you don't want, but it's really, really amazing. And if you haven't checked it out, you definitely should. A huge thank you to our sponsors, Swan Bitcoin, the best and easiest way to learn, earn, and stack Bitcoin. They've got the automatic savings plan, the automatic withdrawals to your cold card or your hardware wallet. They've got the IRA, they've got the vault, they've got the business and employee benefits package, you name it. This is a full suite of financial services related to Bitcoin. You have got to check them out if you haven't. Go to swan.com/guy. No, we are not related and I do not own the company, despite everyone thinking that I do. This show is also brought to you by CoinKite, the makers of the cold card hardware wallet, the tap signer, the sats card, the block clock, the open dime. These guys are the premier, longest running, and most trusted in the Bitcoin security devices market. I am a huge fan, always have been. You should check them out, and you can get 9% off with my discount code, Bitcoin Audible. The links to all that great stuff will be in the show notes. And with that, let's get into today's read. And it's titled, The Difficult Adjustment. A call to arms for innovation, cooperation, and a change in Bitcoin's discourse to create the means for Bitcoin to fulfill its potential. From The Primary Issue. Written by Mark Goodwin and Alex Bergeron. Well, here we are. Block 800,000. None of us reading this will ever see another Bitcoin block height starting with a 7. We're less than a year from another halving, awaiting systemic implications from federal regulation and institutional adoption, standing at the precipice of an American primary election into which Bitcoin has irrevocably inserted itself. Welcome to the big leagues. Bitcoin is being recognized as the most powerful brand in the world, and everyone wants a piece of that sweet orange action. The individuals, companies, and leaders that have rallied behind Satoshi's code have become too influential to ignore any longer. As the new and old worlds collide, the need for serious self-reflection and attention to the heroic efforts expended so far remains more prudent than ever. Our collective work has only just begun, and the task at hand will require cooperation and careful consideration among the distributed stakeholders shaping the future Bitcoin economy. No, Bitcoiners cannot afford to sit idle by the river waiting for the bodies of their enemies to float by. An adequate raft must be built, one that can accommodate every user in a way that trumps legacy alternatives. With a design, quote, set in stone, an incorruptible monetary policy does not warrant complacency. Bitcoin may resist change, but the way we interact with it will evolve, inspired by the lessons of the last decade. In fact, preserving the integrity of the system requires that we innovate and iterate, not stagnate. We are anti-fragility. While Bitcoin has successfully aligned incentives at a scale never before thought possible, it stands to fulfill its aspirations solely on the actions of its stewards. There is no pre-mine. There is no tokenized mechanism to create capital out of nothingness. This is but one of its fundamental differences against market competitors, yet perhaps the most meaningful axiom to consider when sizing up the challenge ahead. There is no marketing team, no foundation. Its course will not be dictated by venture capital or corporate interests. The next wave of Bitcoiners will likely not be pulled, but pushed, when the financial platforms, currencies, and services they currently employ cease to meet their tangible needs. If the banking system of an entire country collapsed overnight, the existing alternative will fall short of the expectations and ideals that we set for ourselves. Even with every reason and forcing function in the world to go full tilt orange pill, they'll still have to compromise on the vaunted sovereign properties we've come to enjoy as early adopters. There is reason to be apprehensive about change, but despite growing pains, Bitcoiners have proven capable of pulling together and defining our fate. We navigated an existential crisis when the odds seemed most stacked against us. We dedicated years of focus, research, and resources towards what seemed like an impossible task, the Lightning Network. In the face of mounting distraction and noise, we didn't falter and we continued to work on hard problems, because the easy way out is not an option. and in the middle of the crater left behind by crypto's latest cycle of largesse and capital destruction, we stand tall, proud, and optimistic. We are anti-fragility. With Bitcoin coming of age, we can carry these experiences forward into our journey and leverage them to inspire a new generation of Bitcoiners, our steps guided by a sense of responsibility and maturity. We are still and should remain a ragtag group of hackers, cypherpunks, and entrepreneurs. But there is an opportunity to adapt to this evolving market reality so as to elevate the results of our efforts and resources. Thankfully, half a decade's worth of research by gritty developers and engineers is finally bearing fruit. Science projects no more, a slew of primitive and versatile technologies are making their way to the market and could open up new design space for products and applications. Timely additions that will position us toward better experiences for onboarding and using Bitcoin. The pressure to change is indeed relentless and will come from all sides. Agents of chaos will leverage this energy and try to turn it against Bitcoin. The only antidote is to focus on building thoughtfully and shipping carefully. The scale of the infrastructure challenge ahead of us is daunting, but necessary. There is, in fact, more juice to squeeze from Bitcoin than what has long been proposed. Wallets, contracts, transactions, the entire Bitcoin stack is about to upgrade again in major ways. The benefits of expanding the scope of our toolkit are self-evident. To achieve this, we can help galvanize those efforts by raising awareness around the exciting innovations knocking on Bitcoin's door. Therein lies the challenge inherent to a global decentralized project. How do we synthesize this information and improve discoverability for contributors? How can we make this knowledge accessible to stakeholders? Bitcoin discourse remains challenging and fragmented, and it has often suffered for it. Though we've created an extraordinary amount of content over the last 10 years, there remain bits and pieces scattered across the internet and hardly cataloged anywhere. It requires Herculean efforts to maintain Bitcoin reference material, and very few people have dared taking on the task. Despite monthly roadshows, we remain burdened with a relative inability to coordinate outside of the conference halls. Developers will sometimes send smoke signals via the mailing list, but who can realistically keep up that is not already well-versed into the dark arts of protocol development? Twitter is a cacophony of ideas quickly abandoned in favor of the new thing. Bitcoin has an attention deficit disorder. Perhaps paradoxically, Lightning has performed better in this context and shown remarkable results in attracting a new class of contributors. Resources abound, and the focus emerging of various projects has motivated a new crop of hackers that are empowered to build around them. This energy and commitment should percolate to other areas of Bitcoin. We are turning a corner, and application developers should be just excited about Layer 1 and other off-chain protocols. Some have already caught on to this tidal change and are actively charging toward the incoming wave. 10 steps ahead of everyone, they have been busy staging the next chapter of programmable money. They are educators and leaders that foster a nascent builder culture and help coordinate everyone involved. Promising pockets of innovation are spreading across the physical and digital space. Their momentum is palpable and deserves more attention. Champions must continue to emerge and collaborate to amplify this growing signal. Ideas should be distilled into tangible user stories. We have an opportunity to communicate a cohesive picture shaped by our collective will. We have more talent and resources to achieve this than we've ever had. A new guard of industry contributors has manifested itself with refreshing energy and optimism. By casting light on their work and facilitating the conversation, we can provide the exposure necessary for the rest of the ecosystem to rally around them. Means, not memes. A new frontier is within reach, one where wallet designers can leverage standardized practices to implement spending policies that will empower users to secure their Bitcoin through space and time. Harnessing multi-signature and timed outputs will become common practice, no longer reserved to power users. Every wallet should support various templates that can offer stronger assurances around the management of our assets. The prospect of smart Bitcoin vaults can unlock a new reactive dimension to wallet security. Lost or compromised keys will no longer be the unmitigated disaster that has plagued us since Bitcoin's inception. Users will have the opportunity to recover funds at risk, even in flight, enhancing the self-custodial experience for new and even the most hardened users. Meanwhile, innovative signature protocols are laying the groundwork for larger organizations to benefit from Bitcoin's unique properties in efficient and privacy-preserving ways. Contextual security frameworks will enable us to safely and reliably involve third parties by bounding their authority to spend or transfer specified balances. Collaborative custody can be achieved without compromising the user's sovereignty. A new class of services will emerge, allowing Bitcoiners to collaborate with designated entities to improve onboarding and ultimately completely redefine the market for custodial services. Using covenants, we can augment the features above and potentially make them scale for the next billion users. With adequate consideration, covenants might also usher in a new era of innovation for Bitcoin Script. Multi-party protocols can open up an entirely new design space for sovereign ownership and private transfers of UTXOs at scale. Nested outputs in taproot trees will supercharge Lightning, allowing it to scale into a connective tissue for this new infrastructure. Smart contracts have arrived. Some might rightfully challenge this notion, claiming that Bitcoin operations, especially Lightning, were always a function of smart contracts. But the advent of DLC products presents the strongest case yet. Options, derivatives, and non-custodial trading and lending will serve as the basis for a new generation of Bitcoin-native financial products. Decentralized markets and order books based on Nostr and using novel Web of Trust primitives could allow those to flourish as a viable alternative to the KYC'd fiat offerings. Bitcoin is facing some of its most formative years to date. It is time we get our act together and grow out of the adolescent quarrels of the past. Most of the elders have left the boat. Satoshi is long gone. Users must step up and accept the responsibilities we've been handed. We claim far more in common than apart. Narratives will continue to stir the pot and divide opinions, but we can pull together and find common ground. Work together, not against one another. We are all far too often guilty of navel-gazing. Bitcoin's history is already riddled enough with disenfranchised gladiators and burnt-out champions. There should be no civil war when the barbarians are at the door. Bitcoin is no blood sport. It is a game of extreme personal responsibility. Yet when applied properly, it benefits all on board. Only by aligning our individual incentives can we manifest the future we want to see. Rough consensus and running code. Means, not memes. The network must remain practically useful for anyone, or at risk becoming practically useless for everyone. We've all earned a responsibility to leave the protocol as permissionless and as serviceable as it was when we found it. Reject apathy and embrace agency. This show is brought to you by Swan.com. Did you know if you were just saving, just did an automatic savings of $50 in Bitcoin every single week, and you stacked with Swan, you'd have saved $2,650, and today it would be worth $4,287. And the longer you do that, the better your chances, because simply put, they're not making any more Bitcoin, and they're making tons of new dollars. Most people are getting screwed, and they don't realize how or why. I mean, obviously, the people who listen to this show probably do get it. But one of the best things you can do to secure yourself for the future, for a future that is increasingly digital and increasingly global, and if you aren't investing, if you aren't hedging into Bitcoin, the decentralized, open, permissionless global monetary system, then what you are necessarily stuck in is the one that's being printed aggressively, that is closed and controlled by political authorities, and is on the hook for the massive unsustainable debts for the Western world. If you want to be on the hook for the $100+ trillion in unfunded liabilities, then please hold as many dollars as you want. But if you would like a foot out the door and you would like to invest in a better future, you gotta start allocating towards Bitcoin. Swan.com has the automatic savings plan. It has the recurring buys at whatever interval you want and whatever amount you want. It has very low, transparent, simple fee setup. They have both traditional and Roth IRAs that you can connect to. They have business packages. They have Swan Private. They have an advisory. They have incredible amounts like resources and education on how to hold your own keys. They have automatic withdrawals. I've been using them for years, since they started. They're Bitcoin only. They are entirely focused on a strong long-term foundation. They're not going to shill you a bunch of crap or tell you that you're going to get 100x returns in 3 days or send you a bunch of airdrops or try to encourage you to trade. No, they want you to set up a position for the long run, a stable, sound position into Bitcoin. And everything you need to get allocated and hold your own keys is right there at swan.com/guy. If you haven't checked them out, you definitely should. swan.com/guy. All right. So that wraps up the article. You know, like I said, I feel like I've been through two eras of Bitcoin already. And it's not easy to adjust how you think about the protocol and how you use it. And it's amazing, like, this was the result or the leading up to the biggest war in Bitcoin's history, the protocol war, the block size war, was because of the inability to adjust how we think about how Bitcoin has to be used and where its role is. And the big blockers, the ones who wanted to fundamentally change the consensus rules and why, was a misunderstanding to how you actually achieved the permissionless, the censorship resistance, and the decentralization of the protocol itself. It was an attempt to scale it by how it was being used rather than what it was able to achieve. You know, back in the days in like 2013, maybe, the 2012 to 2014 era is like there were websites and little services and apps. One of them was really popular was Satoshi Dice. And this was a permissionless in the sense that it was provably fair, not permissionless, that's not really the word, but it was a provably fair system that was built entirely into Bitcoin transactions. Like everything you did on the website, and it was all like gambling, it was just like casual gambling stuff. But it was like one of those things that like you could prove without a doubt because everything was transparent. You could see all the transactions. You were doing all the signing and all the small Satoshi amounts. Everything was zero Satoshi per byte, basically, for a fee. So everything was so, the fees were so non-existent because there was just extra block space all the time that you could run some service like this. And it didn't matter that you were using 100 Satoshis, 1,000 Satoshi payments, even when Bitcoin was like 10 bucks a pop, right? For all intents and purposes, there was virtually no fee market. But this was a really cool service, this idea that you could have provable probability. You could have provable fairness of a gambling system, of a game, of an app, and you could know that you had a 49.5% chance of winning above the amount and a 50% chance of losing or breaking even. And the 0.5% spread was going to Satoshi Dice. Like, it was completely transparent. And that ability was unique. That level of interaction and level of transparency was something that you couldn't do with anything else. But by themselves, they were filling up Bitcoin blocks. And I remember the arguments then. It's like, oh, if we didn't change how all this was, how are we going to add more apps? And it's like, nothing had even started, and we were already realizing the limits of this. But there were people who thought that everything was going to go on chain. That's just how you were going to interact with Bitcoin. They got used to it. They got comfortable with it. And it was a really big adjustment to realize that that entire model, what was one of the most popular services, is an incredibly popular app and game and thing that was proving that Bitcoin worked and provided the assurances and the openness that it did, was just never going to work. It was not a long-term thing. That adjustment was difficult. And we've had to do that in two major eras in how we interacted with it. I mean, I remember the level of arguments and fights, just the viciousness about thinking that we were going to move to Lightning, that everything was going to be an invoice, and now how awful it was that you couldn't have like a static address that you could just post somewhere and people could send you money, and like all the downsides to that, and oh my God, you had to be online to receive a payment, and you had to have liquidity. Nobody else is going to manage channels. That's never going to work. And we've slowly, one by one, knocked these things out. We've, you know, Lightning addresses, LN URL, key send, these sorts of things for not having to make a custom invoice for every single time because they could just talk directly with your node. Then LSPs to be able to just get liquidity instantly, like Phoenix Wallet, Zeus, Dunder, and the Dunder LSP, and Blixt wallet, a Bitcoin Beach wallet. You've got Slash Tags and the BitKit wallet. Async has their node and their LSP. Breeze, all of these things. Breeze, you know, pioneered the very idea of the LSP. But this idea that liquidity is something as a service provided that is non-custodial. Then Nostr proved the decentralized social media proved the incredible value add of having Zaps, of having this market of interaction between all of the different, like being able to instantly and quickly send fractions of a payment, and the amount of money that flows through that, the amount of sats that flow. And then we have value for value, then we have streaming sats, then we have boosts, we have things like Fountain, which I mentioned again at the beginning of the show. I'll shout out again, the new UI is amazing. I'm finally and very happy to say that I'm going entirely over to Fountain for my main podcasting stuff, which is really exciting. I've gotten a good stream of sats. Like, you guys have been amazing and boosting and streaming sats on that platform, and it's just been awesome. I've wanted to dedicate more to it. It's just the UX has been kind of a headache for me. But think about that. The UI there is purely on the app side. Like, they've solved so many problems of Lightning. We've completely changed how we interacted with Bitcoin, at least from my personal experience. And I feel like this is largely the case with a lot of people now. Lightning is the primary mode of onboarding and interaction now. I think it's easy, especially if you started this whole game in 2021 or something, 2020, it's easy to lose sight of what an incredible feat that is. You probably don't realize that for 3 or 4 years of Lightning's early years, this was a pipe dream. This was vaporware. This was never going to work. And it's like hard, difficult infrastructure that everything else depends on. So it's not an easy bootstrapping process. There's no default. It's amazing. Like, some people talk about, like, oh, crypto has more adoption in this thing. It's like, well, of course it does. People are just gambling and speculating in something that isn't even a scaling solution. It's just a repeat of the same problem in some new network with some new blockchain that people are going to gamble on. It's not real use. It's pure speculation of like, oh, well, I hope that this is going to 10x. It's not the use of that thing as a monetary instrument. Lightning has no token to sell. There's no airdrops. There's no default, like, liquidity of a bunch of people coming in thinking that they're going to make a 10x on their money. It's a slow, complicated, multifaceted build-out of bootstrapping an entire payments liquidity network on top of the Bitcoin system. It was always going to take a long time. But here's the thing, is we've thought about this as user payments, as micropayments, as the user interacting and, you know, having live channels that, you know, automatically open on the fly, and now we are in a high fee environment. Now we are in a place where fees have been sustainably, for multiple weeks, been sustainably above, you know, 50, 100 sats per V-byte, which, you know, for a typical transaction is in the $3 to $20 range. Let me look at what it is right now. I haven't even looked today. So high priority transactions right now are $6. And no priority, if you just don't even care, you have no idea when it's going to get confirmed, is $2.70. I think it's important to realize that, as has happened multiple times in the past with Bitcoin, the tools that we think of today as the pleb, the user, the easy, the end application tools are going to move towards infrastructure. They get proven out in the simple use cases, in the kind of like fun, playful stuff. It's kind of a minimum viable product sort of thing. Lightning was always a stepping stone. What you end up with when you have a liquidity network as powerful and as instant as Lightning on top of Bitcoin, it's going to be an interconnective tissue with all of the layer threes. Or what you could consider maybe Lightning actually becomes layer three. It depends on how your mental model works. Lightning becomes the layer three protocol that connects between all of the other layer twos, the Fediment, the Arc, the Liquid, and the federated sidechain models. And with MuSig 2 on the way, I think Liquid is going to get a very, very fascinating and interesting update, is that we're going to, with the Taproot multi-sig option, is you're just going to have like very, very large pools of federations. But then you have channel pools, and you have kind of, you know, the local, the eCash mints and stuff that are not even federated, but like more of like a very small custodial model. But Lightning is going to shift towards the infrastructure. It's going to be the business, the service provider route. It's going to be the channel pool. It's going to be the family trust fund sort of setups. It's going to be the thing that connects small groups of people, and there's going to be an entirely new layer of interaction and a new layer of trust and privacy built on top of it. And we're going to have to rethink how this works and how we interact with it. And then with things like BitVM, which we have an episode on, I'll try to have episodes for all of these for people who aren't like totally familiar with them, or, you know, just here's a bunch of jargon. They're new to Bitcoin. I still have new people from time to time, and I do a bad job of reiterating some of these basic things. But the number of new tools and techniques and models for additional protocols on top that we have are going to change the game all over again. And it's important to remember that when you're used to, you know, think about it in the context of the internet, right? You're used to setting up your own email server or a news group or something like that. And, or, you know, at the very beginning of it, you would manually set up your own TCP/IP connection. You would connect to another computer via terminal, and you would just think that that's the way you're going to do it. It's just going to be run that way. Think about how incredibly different it is today when you have the base layer of TCP/IP, then you have HTML, and you have both a router, a modem, and a router in your mix, and you just think nobody's ever going to set all that up. Nobody's going to deal with all that complicated mess. But then everybody has one, and it's basically plug and play. Then you have the web, and then you have the applications built on top of the interfaces built on the web, built on TCP/IP. When we think about Bitcoin in this context, using this analogy, there is going to be a massive amount of change. There's going to be another era. And I think there's going to be this era is going to be crazy. The traditional markets are allocating. The ETFs are coming. The nation states are coming. Some of the smaller ones are already here. We've got El Salvador, Argentina. There's a couple small nations in Africa that are increasingly looking very friendly. We will not make it through this bull run without some incredible and probably shocking shifts when it comes to that part of the market, of the ecosystem. This next bull run, Bitcoin is going to come out of it as a massive international, a global player in the field of monetary infrastructure. And it will price out at the base layer things that we are used to, that we take for granted. And understand, it's not a bad thing. It just is. It's necessary to how Bitcoin works. If Bitcoin is going to provide the assurances, the security, the level of censorship resistance and decentralization that it does today, it must inevitably mature into a far larger, harder, and more robust global settlement system, base infrastructure system. We are quickly leaving the era where we are going to even be able to squabble about stamps and inscriptions. And this is also why I think covenants are a really, really important tool that I feel like, especially with CTV. So long story short for covenants, for anybody who's doesn't really know about this kind of primitive, it's essentially a way to guarantee that a certain balance of Bitcoin can only be spent a certain way. But the power of it is, in combination with the basic scripting tools like time locks and multisig and all of this stuff, the real fascinating benefit of it is that you can essentially separate out a single balance. So a great example is that, like, let's say I've got my family and we've got a one Bitcoin balance. Well, I can essentially write into the transaction that that one Bitcoin balance must be sent 0.1 to my wife, 0.1 to me, 0.1 to my in-laws, 0.1 to my parents, et cetera, et cetera. And we can divide that up in such a way that the script that I literally cannot spend that Bitcoin without sending exactly those amounts to exactly those different people. So even though it's a single balance in a single address, it's virtually completely separate ownership. But I can also have it be a multisig where two different options exist. Either A, we send the CTV out to everyone, it can only be spent that way with one key, or B, we have a multisig where as long as everybody signs, we can update it and change the agreement. Boom, now we have a single UTXO, which we all own collectively, which any individual can always pay out to themselves what they are owed, and together we can all update it to change our internal ownership. We can trade amongst ourselves, we can swap funds back and forth, we can make, you know, updates to it, and it's all behind a single address and a single balance. But we never really have to trust each other because everyone's signature is required. This is a basic sort of model or setup that you can have with something like CTV, with this idea of commitments, where you can essentially pre-sign the output of the next balance or the next ownership of Bitcoin. This is likely, one way or the other, there's a couple of different proposals for a covenant-type thing, of different ways to accomplish this task with varying degrees of, you know, possible externalities, simplicity, the breadth of features versus, like, you know, just doing the really core thing. And that's really the problem, is that, like, there doesn't seem to be any great consensus on which way that we implement this. But the number of really fascinating proposals and things that can be done with it are, it's really exciting. And it's going to be one of those things, like one of the things that they specifically mentioned, that Alex and Mark mentioned in this article, is the idea of vaults and the sort of reactionary security. Is that what you can do is you can make it so that if someone hacks your keys, you can essentially have a backup key, or you can have a law firm or your family security IT guy or whatever who has a backup key that after a month it's valid, so that if you ever lose your key or somebody ever hacks it, that you can actually control where it goes to and what the time lock is, and that within a certain period of time, you can make it so that the funds simply aren't accessible, and that in a reactionary sense, someone can actually recover those funds. So it really changes the game when it comes to long-term security and what you're able to accomplish when you're talking about financial services and insurance, because Bitcoin is the pristine collateral. It is the asset that can be where ownership and security and explicit control can be split up in such a way that things like insanely novel approaches to all of these things. You could literally have an insurance company or an insurance fund without an insurance company at all, without any of the overhead of employees, or because they don't have to be, they literally don't have to be a custodian. And I think we're entering the era of Bitcoin where the liquidity, the legitimacy, and the integration of the network and the asset is going to be great enough that these things finally start popping up. And then you have something else that Mark and Alex brought up in the piece specifically is DLCs, which have been, I've been reading about DLC models and things on like SherdBits for, I don't know, 5 years, it feels like. And it's going to be fascinating to see what sort of models finally are realized there, because we're talking about the ability to have it, you know, UTX Oracle is actually a very interesting one that we've touched on very recently, but this idea of having a independent party attest to something, to claim a certain price or the result of, you know, some agreement, a move in the market, a football game, that sort of thing, like who is the winner, and have it be the deciding factor in the ownership of a smart contract. But the really powerful thing, I think, just because it's a really simple thing to understand, is the idea of the betting on a football game or an election, the quote-unquote, the official gamble of some explicit event. It's kind of the easy example. But I think what people fail to appreciate is, especially in a lot of these different DEXs and the open exchanges and the open market exchanges that are actually built on smart contracts and built on like Lightning liquidity and these external layer three sort of market models, I think it's kind of underappreciated that at the time when stablecoins, centralized stablecoins, are about to be far more scrutinized and far more directly and heavily controlled, influenced, and surveilled by nation states and what they will allow in their jurisdiction, I think we're also going to see the birth of the decentralized stable sat, the contract, the liquidity contract that actually fluctuates based on the price of Bitcoin. And it will be fascinating to see that unfold as people can actually hold an agreement, a contract denominated in Bitcoin, move it as Bitcoin, as sats over Lightning or in a, you know, think about like Forex markets are massive markets with multi-trillion dollars in liquidity in very short time spans. It's a huge mechanism of arbitraging between currencies in order to make international deals. I think it's underappreciated the role that Bitcoin is likely to play when you can Forex markets are centralized. Again, necessarily, everything in the fiat currency market is essentially permissioned and centralized. There's not really an alternative. It can't be built any other way because the very nature of the currencies are a centralized, permissioned existence. It's entries on someone's explicit spreadsheet with their direct and total control. And when we're talking about what's going to get priced out and how the highest value of this system as a global open infrastructure, how that will play out, I think we're completely discounting that just the Forex markets. We're talking about an international agreement in shifting of massive net liquidity between massive networks, not just over Lightning Network and moving a Bitcoin or two. I'm talking about like thousands of Bitcoin in exchange for huge agreements. Like Bitcoin is going to shine. That like the only reason it cannot be used in those markets right now is purely a function of liquidity. We are going to enter the era where the liquidity can actually handle that sort of trade. And when it can, the difference in the assurances, the agreement, and the settlement in that market is going to be night and day. There will be nothing that compares to Bitcoin. And it is, again, it's purely, we're talking about when Bitcoin reaches $5 to $10 trillion in market cap, there is nothing that compares. Nothing can even come close to doing what Bitcoin can do. I think it's really easy to get stuck in our current mindset thinking about, you know, how much I can use this on Fountain or Value for Value or how my Phoenix wallet fees are, and we lose how unbelievably massive of a deal it is that a small country that has been universally screwed over by the fiat system for the better part of a century can now independently and sovereignly make a multi-deca billion-dollar deal with a larger country without any custodial risk, without any ability for that country to dominate and manipulate or control their currency, that they can have the ability to hold their own keys. This is going to change the context and the power dynamics of sovereignty with businesses, with nation states, with international commerce on a level that we aren't prepared for. And Bitcoin is about to flood into this scene in a really, really bizarre way and in an environment that's changing at an incredibly rapid pace. And it will be using all of these tools that we have built for stupid pleb things that we think of as, you know, like things that are built into an app or, you know, toys and games, these basic primitives that we've used for simple things, for podcast streaming. These will be used by massive multinational corporations in, I think, in the next era. Maybe it'll be two, but I don't know. This feels like a point where, like, we are in the big leagues. The dynamic, the conversation, what is even deemed as possible is going to change a lot. And I think where we need to keep our footing, what we need to do is build as fast as we can. And this is where I think AI, this is why I started AI Unchained, the other podcast, is because I think this is going to be so critical in the next like 3 to 5 years in particular before I think we could see ourselves truly in the era of AI as it being one of the dominant technological platforms. Hell, maybe it happens quicker. It's really hard to say. But where I think it's going to shine in particular is code. And this is something that I've been talking about since I started the show. And I think this gives us the capacity to, what we need to do is rebuild, that's not really the term, is we need to build out the next era, the next layer of things as fast as we possibly can so that we don't get pushed out in this massive move of new markets and new liquidity. And obviously, and always, we need to run nodes. If you aren't running a node, you need to run a node. That is the, at the end of the day, that is the security. That is still the ultimate in, I am protecting my economic sovereignty by running the rules and the consensus that I know I am participating in. And any alternatives, any attempt to change those rules, evicts the other person from your network. And nothing about that fight is done. In fact, I think we're going to enter a far bigger shift, a far bigger change in how we think about interacting with Bitcoin and what we need to defend it against. We've seen for many, many years in Bitcoin that the new flood of people come in and there's a reason why it's a meme. Hi, I just discovered Bitcoin and I'm here to fix it. Everyone who come, when the traditional market comes in, they think they're going to see all the things that are wrong with Bitcoin. They're going to become part of Bitcoin. And now it's time to upgrade it. It's time to get Bitcoin out of the past and bring it into the future now that it's part of the legitimate markets. And the real people, the big boy pants are now put on. And, you know, it's time to update it. If you aren't preparing for that fight, if we aren't preparing to have that node to stand up to them again, We got a very small preview of what I think that would be like in the block size war, and I think we're going to see it again, and we must protect the network. We must prevent them from having the influence and control that they think, that I'm sure they think they will have as soon as they show up. And one of the most important things, what that really means, is that we cannot stagnate. We cannot think that we've already won, that we just wait this thing out. We have to build aggressively. We need to build faster than we were building before. And everyone who realizes that they're, you know, yeah, sure, you know a little bit about code, but you can't really, never really built like a project. Now is the time to think about what you can build. Now is the time to use the AI tools to figure out how you can build something to enable sovereignty on another layer or with another application that, you know, seem like this distant project that maybe one day we'll tackle. Now is the time to actually tackle it, because the more avenues we can have to benefit and help the decentralization, the communication layers. This is another great example with HyperCore and Nostr, is that these things are not even directly related to Bitcoin, but they are massive in making Bitcoin more powerful. Not only does Nostr show Zaps and the incredible potential of Lightning, both as a service and a payment system, as a payment network, but it is also the communication layer. Bitcoin is dependent on the communication layer. Think about it, that Nostr is also a way to send out broadcast transactions in the face of a potential censorship of Bitcoin transactions. HyperCore is a way to connect to each other, to create a mining pool, to create to connect nodes that will punch through network firewalls, that will connect peer-to-peer, and you don't have to go through a web server. It is an alternative mode of communication that can get bandwidth around traditional infrastructure. And the more of those we have, the stronger Bitcoin is. And the stronger Bitcoin is, the more we can monetize and sustain that sort of infrastructure. These things feed back on themselves. If you have a simple idea for a Nostr app that's going to bring another 10,000 people to it, if you have a simple thing that you can build, a cool idea that you can build in HyperCore, if you have a cool Bitcoin app, a Lightning app, just a web service, something, like, you have to remember there, like how simple some of the killer apps were when it came to the web and the early days of the internet. These things stack on each other quick. And if we can get 1,000 people building 1,000 things, only one of them has to catch to make them all 100 times as valuable. And I think the avalanche of what is coming in this era is going to be so big, the amount of noise is going to be so loud, that it will be easy for people, services, the cypherpunk message to get lost. And we need to make sure that that doesn't happen. And that means that we build. I want to give a quote here. So this is from the article. It says, "While Bitcoin has successfully aligned incentives at a scale never before thought possible, it stands to fulfill its aspirations solely on the actions of its stewards. There is no pre-mine. There is no tokenized mechanism to create capital out of nothingness. This is but one of its fundamental differences against market competitors, yet perhaps the most meaningful axiom to consider when sizing up the challenge ahead. There is no marketing team, no foundation. Its course will not be dictated by venture capital or corporate interests. The next wave of Bitcoiners will likely not be pulled, but pushed when the financial platforms, currencies, and services they currently employ cease to meet their tangible needs. If the banking system of an entire country collapsed overnight, the existing alternative will fall short of the expectations and ideals that we set for ourselves. Even with every reason and forcing function in the world to go full tilt orange pill, they will have to compromise on the vaunted sovereign properties we've come to enjoy as early adopters." We've done this before, though. We have done this before, and we can do it again. We can keep doing it. And I think we even have so many of the tools. Like BitVM, the power of being able to have arbitrary code without any burden on the Bitcoin system itself, because it's hidden in the script, such that you can literally force any piece of software or code by essentially tricking the script into, you know, provably executing this code. And then the ability to instantly plug into whatever we build into the Lightning Network, into something that's already globally available and has the liquidity and the payment infrastructure that is continuing to be built out. I think people discount the value of that, of the fact that we've done the harder work of the interconnective tissue, of the payment system, the liquidity network that will be built between all of the interactions. You know, that's one of the things on, I think it was Nate said this on the episode with BTC Sessions, the Christmas session, or a Christmas episode, is that, you know, there's a lot of these, there's like some L2 stuff on Ethereum or whatever that have become popular, but they don't have any interconnective tissue. There's no like real way to send from one to the other because there's not this universal bridge. They're kind of closed groups or closed networks. Whereas Lightning is the open universal network, the channel-based system that is going to interop between these things. So that when we have Lightning, when we have Liquid, when we have Fediment, when we have eCash, when we have Arc, when we have whatever we have with BitVM, who even knows, the integration instantly with Lightning is not only a perfect and obvious no-brainer, it immediately makes instant and low-cost settlement and payments available to the entire ecosystem, straight into another Fediment, another eCash, another Liquid sidechain, whatever it is. I think we properly did the hard task first and now have the interconnective tissue that is going to work between all of these additional, these new, thinking of these as the application layer of payments and the application layer of how to interact and customize this experience and customize the trust. That's the other thing too, is to where to trade off the trust, where to trade off the privacy, and what optionality we can give to, you know, anyone, people all over the world, whether regardless of their jurisdiction or the highest value use that they have for the system. But I want to end this episode with another quote, actually, a paragraph from this article. It says, "There is reason to be apprehensive about change. But despite growing pains, Bitcoiners have proven capable of pulling together and defining our fate. We navigated an existential crisis when the odds seemed most stacked against us. We dedicated years of focus, research, and resources towards what seemed like an impossible task, the Lightning Network. In the face of mounting distraction and noise, we didn't falter, and we continued to work on hard problems, because the easy way out is not an option. In the middle of the crater left behind by crypto's latest cycle of largesse and capital destruction, we stand tall, proud, and optimistic. We are anti-fragility." I love that paragraph because I think it's important, especially for the new people here, to remember that we won when the odds could not have seemed more stacked against us. I don't think people realize how hopeless. Like, there were moments where I was like I didn't even know if this was going to work. Like, how do we defend Bitcoin from this forced change, from what this was going to be? But the game theory, the idea of it seemed to work out. It seemed to just have a glimmer of hope. But all of the major corporations, the major exchanges, Coinbase, the major mining pools, Bitmain, the maker of almost, it was like the vast majority of ASICs on the entire market. They had 88% or some crap like that of the representative of the hash power sign off on this. They were going to force a consensus change on the network and everybody else was just going to have to eat it. They did not win. They had to abandon their fork. Futures contracts were dumping the hell out of their coin that didn't even exist yet because nobody had the confidence that everybody was going to follow their fork. And the nodes, the runners, the developers, not all the developers, some of them, but really more than anything, the community held the line that this change was not a controversial change, was not going to be forced onto the network because Coinbase and all their buddies said so. If you don't know about this story and how this played out, I encourage you to listen to The Block Size War, or read The Block Size War by Jonathan Beer. If you want to listen to it, it's read by me, but I love the book, and it's one of the most comprehensive and honest retellings of the entire episode. And I think, if nothing else, I think it's so important to read that book for the perspective, because I think we're going to see this again. I think we're going to play this game all over again, and we're going to have to fight a bigger enemy at a bigger scale. But we have the example. We have the knowledge of how that game theory plays out, of where the tipping point in the power of defending that truly is. I think it's a Thomas Jefferson quote that the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. And I think that really applies here. You know, Bitcoin is the people's money, but it requires that the people who care about it defend it. It is our ticket out of this dystopian absurdity. But we have to protect it actively. Complacency is simply not an option. For Bitcoin to win, I have said before that all that really has to happen that is Bitcoin has to survive. But that does not mean that we don't have to do anything. To the contrary, there is a long and arduous battle that we will have to fight in to ensure that it does continue to do what Bitcoin does. So be ready for changing how you interact with and how you think about Bitcoin. It is something that every Bitcoiner who has been here for 4, 5, 6 years has already had to do, and it is and always will be necessary as we continue forward. So stay humble and stack sats. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you have had a wonderful holiday break. I will catch you guys on Friday with another episode. But do not forget to check out, I'll appease my brother and make sure that I mention this again. Don't forget to check out the YouTube channel and the AI Unchained podcast. There's a lot of content that I've been putting both exclusively on YouTube and Rumble. And Rumble is just my backup. Subscribe over there because YouTube's going to kick me off at some point for whatever reason. Because that's how YouTube do. And of course, check out AI Unchained. There's lots of videos and really fascinating discussion happening over there. And no matter what I do, I cannot help but make about 80% of that show also Bitcoin related. So if you are even slightly interested in it, I encourage you to check it out. I've had a lot of great feedback from people who've been enjoying the show. So don't forget to leave a review. It is by far one of the easiest ways to support the show. And of course, AI Unchained. And it's free. Boost us on Fountain, and check out our amazing sponsors at the links that are so conveniently available in this episode description. A huge thank you to CoinKite for protecting my Bitcoin with Gold Card Hardware Wallet, and to Swan Bitcoin for giving me a shitcoin-free platform for my Bitcoin allocation and financial services, and to both for keeping this show alive for the audionauts out there. Thank you, guys. This is Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan. And until next time, take it easy, guys. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. Frederick Douglass.